The Money Show with Bruce Whitfield, your number one news and talk station.
The Money Show brought to you by Old Mutual. Do great things. Donald Trump's children are arriving at the Capitol, where Donald Trump will be sworn in this evening. An historical day. The 45th President of the United States. He and Barack Obama have arrived at the U.S. Capitol, and the program is well underway. We'll talk to Professor John Stremlau, the Professor of International Relations at Wits University this evening. What does it mean for the globe? Ben Brody, who is a reporter at Bloomberg, is in Washington, D.C. We'll talk to him live and just find out what the vibe is like in D.C. Stephen Curtis, our reporter in Davos, wrapping up today. The last day of Davos was a bit of a damn squib. The snow has melted, the pavements are icy, and everyone's desperate to get home before the weekend, except Stephen. So we'll talk to him and just find out what he's learned this week about the elites and whether or not the elites finally in Davos are beginning to talk about sharing. I found last night, the FNB, the First National Bank Chief Executive Jacques Celliers, how do I say this politely, not very forthcoming last night. He seems to be saying a little bit more today, FNB, saying it'll consider settlement offers with the 48 customers who were robbed in the Parktown burglary of safety boxes. And also, FNB has announced this afternoon it has suspended three employees there. I did suggest to Jacques Celliers that the whole thing smacked of an inside job. I don't know if these three employees were directly implicated, but there do seem to be questions around the role they did or did not play in that particular robbery. Still no word, though, if you're one of the 350 people affected by the very similar robbery that happened at the Randburg safe deposit boxes just a couple of days before Parktown. No word on what's happening there just yet.
The Money Show on
your number one news and talk station.
Let's chat very briefly to Ben Brody, reporter at Bloomberg. There seem to be lots of people in Washington, D.C., the mall, all the way from the Capitol to the Lincoln Memorial seems to be packed with people. Has it got a festive vibe? Does it feel like Barack Obama's inauguration 8 years ago, Ben Brody?
Well, thank you for having me. From what we can tell, there certainly is a lot of excitement among those people who are in the Capitol for the inauguration, those people who are going. I can tell you that the vibe in the Capitol itself, in the city sort of more broadly, is a little bit more reserved. There aren't a lot of people coming in from the Virginia or Maryland suburbs. There aren't a lot of people downtown working, and there isn't quite the same crush of people that you might have seen here 8 years ago. It's a little more subdued. Now, of course, this is a Democratic part of the country, and so it's perhaps not surprising that not as many people came in. But a little bit outside of maybe that area where the parade and the inauguration are happening, things are a little bit quieter and sometimes even a little bit tense with police and SWAT.
There does seem to be a very, very heavy police presence. Has there been any indication of a specific threat at this event, or is it just part of the general ratcheting up of U.S. security around an event like this?
Well, certainly around an event like this, there is always a tremendous amount of security. They want to make sure that they are prepared in case anything happens. They don't want to be caught unawares. But we have had a series of protests. Some of them are peaceful and sort of move from place to place chanting. But we have also had some smashed windows, some garbage pails thrown into the ground, some confrontations with police, shoving, flashbangs, that sort of thing. It's seemed to resolve itself happen relatively quickly. There haven't been ongoing clashes, but certainly that's another aspect of this, sort of a bit away from the parade route where we're sort of waiting right now. We are seeing, occasional protests, and we are certainly seeing that police presence, lines of police in riot gear, large trucks blocking the streets, that sort of thing.
I think I would pay money to know what Hillary Clinton is thinking today. She's got the grimace of somebody who's going to the dentist for root canal work. She looks like she would rather be in the dentist's chair than standing next to Bill Clinton. She is there by virtue of the fact that Bill Clinton was President of the United States and she was First Lady. This could have been her day, but it isn't.
Correct. I think in addition to really wanting to be in the dentist chair or just about anywhere else, I think she'd want to be in front of the podium taking that oath of office. But she is standing there. She tweeted just before she got into the Capitol where the inauguration is happening, that she is there to support the United States. She's there to support democracy and that she continues to believe in those things. But I agree with you. We have also heard reports that some in the crowd were chanting, lock her up, which was a chant that people used on the campaign trail at Trump rallies, suggesting that she was a criminal, that she confronted those when she came out. We sort of saw her smile pull much tighter, as you said, that sort of, boy, I wish I was at the dentist smile. So I would certainly give a lot to know what she's thinking as well.
Traditionally, the outgoing president writes a letter to their successor. Barack Obama would have done that today. He probably would have written the letter and slipped it into, I don't know, the top left, or in the case of Donald Trump, maybe the top right drawer of the desk in the Oval Office. We know that George H.W. Bush, who would have been there today, but who's been admitted to hospital along with Barbara Bush in the last couple of days, we've seen letters that he's written to Donald Trump. It's a very civilized handover. This is the democratic process at its slickest, most efficient, and the way it should work, I suppose, across the world.
Right, and I think it's sort of fundamental to acknowledge, those things aren't in law. These things are enshrined in U.S. tradition. They aren't always observed, but by and large they are. As you said, President George H.W. Bush, President Clinton to the younger Bush, the younger Bush, President Obama. And those have been made public, and they are often saying, we are rooting for you. We are very hopeful for what you can do for the country. But these are enshrined in tradition. And, it's a bit unclear what we're going to be seeing for the next 4 years in terms of tradition. Donald Trump was elected as someone to come and shake up Washington and who didn't respect the political process as it sort of currently was practiced. Today is clearly a lot of the ceremony that we have seen in previous inaugurations. But what happens after this is a little bit unclear.
Ben Brody, thank you. I'll let you get back to your day job at Bloomberg. Thank you for chatting to us this evening. Nice chat with Ben Brody in Washington, D.C. Professor John Stremlau is Professor of International Relations at Wits University. Perhaps you can answer that question, John Stremlau, as to how this translates. We're all polite. We're going through the pomp and ceremony. Everybody's behaving the way they should for now. Does it all change once Donald Trump says, I do, or whatever it is that a president says when he accepts the job?
Well, that'll be an interesting question to keep in mind for anyone who's got the patience to listen, as I'm going to do, to the speech itself, because I think it would be a very significant gesture on Trump's part, especially after this very contentious transition period that did not amount to a healing process in any way like what Obama did in his transition or Clinton in his transition. Does he in this speech acknowledge Barack Obama with appreciation for the very process you just outlined? Does he have a kind word to say to Hillary Clinton with the scream still lock her up? And indeed, Trump's Twitter, jittery Twitter finger does tend to jump on those kind of things. Is he going to be criticizing those who are boycotting and demonstrating? Will he get too narrow on Make America Great Again? I would think that markets would be looking rather carefully at the tone of this speech to see whether or not they're going to stabilize and maybe even appreciate it a little bit, particularly if he has a few nice things to say about the business community in the speech. But those are the kind of sort of initial highlights that I think will get us thinking about what kind of a man this is going to be in office.
Look, there's a huge amount of business optimism. There's a huge amount of expectation that Donald Trump is going to spend money he doesn't have in order to make America great again. And it's an astonishing slogan for those of us outside of the United States. Growth of 3.3%, unemployment at historic lows. All of these high-level statistics point to a country in pretty good shape. I know the middle class feels poorer. I know the working class hasn't seen real wage increases for years, but it's in pretty good shape by global standards.
Of course.
Wait. Oh, there you are. Sorry, you disappeared. Oh, no, he's gone. Look, we got a nice feel from John Stremlau. We got a sense of what he's anticipating. Yeah, he's going to be watching the speech. He's going to be dissecting the speech. Eyewitness News is going to be keeping a very close watch on the acceptance speech of Donald Trump as he delivers it. Joe Biden's wife accompanies Michelle Obama. They arrive on the platform. There's a very carefully orchestrated protocol which is being played out here. Barack Obama will then shortly take to the podium as well. And then the incoming president, the 45th president of the United States, Donald John Trump and Mike Pence, will become the holders of the most powerful seat in the world for now. Xi Jinping used the opportunity in Davos this week to position himself as a leader of the future. Talk to Stephen Curtis about that. He's in Davos in about 20 minutes' time.
The Money Show.
Your number one news and talk station.
There's plenty of information available online if you want to go through the gory detail of the Gupta affidavit filed today in response to Finance Minister Pravin Gordhan's court appeal. Remember, he went to court to say, please block me, prevent me, make it impossible for me to intervene in the banking affairs of the Guptas. It was the president who ordered, what's the collective noun for ministers? A clutch of ministers, if you like, to see the banks on behalf of the Guptas and to intercede. Pravin Gordhan refused. The mineral resources minister, Mosabenzi Zwane, took to the task with extraordinary zeal. He then lied on a government letterhead that cabinet would order an inquiry into the banks, and he didn't lose his job. The affidavit makes many points. The Gupta affidavit today makes many points, including that all Gordhan had to do was to refuse to intercede and that there was no need to go to court. And here's a quote from the affidavit. Oak Bay has never suggested that the minister is required to intervene in the bank-customer relationship. There's no contested legal issue here, and there is never any reason for the minister to bring this application. Well, there's the problem. It wasn't the minister appealing against the Guptas. I looked at it. This is the minister sort of going to the courts for protection from his own boss. That was my interpretation of it anyway. This has got nothing to do with the Guptas directly. And now they're filing an affidavit sort of opposing the motion by Pravin Gordhan. The minister's, and then just to quote more from the affidavit, the minister's superfluous application is riddled with factual and legal errors. The minister's reliance on the list of 72 purported suspicious transaction reports is misplaced, and the minister's application is supported by a flawed analysis and faulty factual record. Now, these 72 purported suspicious transactions are... that is exactly what they are. They are suspicious transactions. They're suspicious because the Financial Intelligence Center has deemed them to be suspicious. The Financial Intelligence Center didn't say that these are illegal transactions or these are dodgy transactions. It simply flagged them as suspicious, pointing towards 6.8 billion rands worth of money laundering. Not saying they've done anything wrong. It's like we really need to look at this more closely. And the banks, when they get a warning like that from the Financial Intelligence Center, go, hey, our reputations are at stake. We can't be seen to be party to money laundering. So what the Guptas should have done, rather than file this affidavit, in my view, is take the banks to court and say, reopen our accounts or we will sue you. But they haven't done that. And that remains the question as to why they haven't and why they are prevaricating on the outskirts of this matter and playing politics with the matter suggests they question whether or not they will win in court. I don't know the answer to that question, but I still don't understand why the banks, why the Guptas haven't taken the banks directly to court. If anybody has that answer for me, I'll take it on 021-446-0567, 011-883-0702.
The Money Show.
The markets.
Also today, interesting to see Naspers objecting to a plan and publicly objecting to a plan which is forcing listed companies to change their auditors every 10 years. It's called auditor rotation, compulsory thing that companies are going to have to do. Regulators basically want to ensure that the relationship doesn't get too cozy between auditors and the companies whose accounts that they sign off on and verify. Naspers says the regulator did no independent research, ignored the views of those that opposed the move. And other JSE-listed companies have also objected. Garth Curry is with Sanlam Private Wealth. Audit rotation does make sense from the perspective of an investor who would like to see a little bit of objectivity in the process. Surely, Garth?
Good evening, Bruce. I think it does, Bruce. I mean, it's a hard one to not quantify, and people want everything to be fair and to make sure that the auditors are constantly in check as well.
Yeah, I mean, it's, one doesn't want these relationships getting too strong. But also, I feel a little bit for Naspers and other big, complicated companies which operate across multiple jurisdictions. They've got very, very different companies operating in different geographies and different time zones. That it's a bit like being a regular person trying to change your bank account. You know, it's a lot of admin, right? You know, it's going to take a year to get it bedded down. Imagine being a Naspers and having to explain to the new auditors how the business works. It's pretty tough, I suspect.
It is, Bruce, and I mean, you also build a relationship with those people over time, and you basically get to know them and how they operate, and it's easier for you to present your results to them so that they can put it in print and audit it. So to change it takes a while. To get used to the new people takes time.
But I mean, every 10 years doesn't seem like too much of a burden. Are the companies misguided on this?
I know, it's a new issue. I mean, this is a changing world, Bruce. It's hard to... 10 years is a long time, but in the same token... Who do they go to? You know, you've got to go, which auditor are they going to go to? Because you've got to have reputable auditors. So does that mean that an auditor is going to have to switch from a Naspers to a MTN or Vodacom?
Well, it's business for them, and they'll charge for it, I promise. They really will. How are markets looking? How are markets feeling? They felt a little bit patchy and a little bit subdued today.
We've had a good run since the beginning of the year, Bruce. We've seen some changes, and we've seen the markets pick up ahead of Donald Trump. And, of course,
it's about 5% now taking a breather. Five or 6% up so far this year?
5% up. I mean, the index has jumped from 50,000 to just under 53,000, took a bit of a breather today and came back marginally in South Africa. But it's we've had a good run on the resources. We've had a good run on the financials, and they've pulled back quite a bit today. They've taken a bit of profits on financials, and some of the companies have been coming through with better results in the US and locally, and that's helped push the markets a little higher. And, you know, sentiment that Trump is going to try and build business in America and reconstruct, it's been good for emerging markets because of the resources have run a bit on that, and that's really helped many emerging markets to go better. And our rand has drifted firmer because the dollar was sitting at the beginning of the year at 104 to the euro, and has drifted out to approximately 107. So the dollar is slightly weaker on Trump coming in. But Yellen, of course, could change that if interest rates move up a little faster than anticipated in the US. So it's going to be a changing world this year, Bruce.
Mercedes is a changing world. Donald Trump is making his way through the Capitol. He looks pretty morose. I mean, Barack Obama earlier took to the podium. Typical, charming, you know, making jokes with everybody else at the podium. He doesn't have to worry about tomorrow. It becomes Donald Trump's problem. And he looks like Donald Trump does look like he's carrying the worries of the world on his shoulders. He's wondering whether or not this was a good idea after all.
He's got his family behind him, Bruce.
His family have already gone the front. They're the most excited about it. Oh, hello, he says to the camera. Donald Trump, the 45th president of the United States, about to be sworn in. Look, he looks like he's going to take it seriously. And that's good. Maubane, Mr. Yesterday on Twitter, says, will the radicalism of Trump improve the rand against major currencies? If that's the case, I love this guy. we have seen gradual strengthening. I mean, 12 months ago, the rand was a dog, and there's been a nice recovery.
A lot of it's been, I think, local politics, though. We weren't not downgraded. We've had a change in ministers. We've had Brexit. We've got Trump in. We've still got to go through what happens in Europe with the French and German elections coming up later this year, and where does Brexit go? But with the pound weakening slightly, we've definitely seen and the dollar drifting out a bit, we've seen the rand strengthen on the back of that, and we seem to be holding our own. And our differential in our government bonds, that have our government bonds on this have benefited. They've gone from over 9.5% down to 8.6%. And the American government bonds have drifted out from 1.5% to 2.5% because of Trump. So the gap between interest rates have definitely been narrowing, and that's helped our currency. But I think a lot of it will depend on what is the political horizon look like in South Africa going forward. Do we get downgraded in June, or what happens on the political front with a change of political situations in South Africa? So it's not going to be an easy ride, but for now it definitely looks like with Trump spending more money on infrastructure and the Chinese economy growing better than anticipated for 3 quarters in a row at 6.8%. Resources are picking up, and that's helping emerging market currencies like the South African rand get better.
Thank you very much, Garth Curry. Garth Curry is with Sanlam Private Wealth this evening, giving us a feel of what's going on in the world. Let's have a quick listen to what's going on in America. The deputy president-elect has arrived at the podium. Donald Trump has been making his way throughout through the Capitol, and I suspect he will then join Mike Pence and his own family, Joe Biden, the Vice President of the United States, and Barack Obama, having a little word together as they await the arrival of the 45th President of the United States, Donald Trump. It's an historical day. It is a big change. It is the way of the world will be different in the next 4 years. Let's see.
Right. The Senate Sergeant-at-Arms, Frank Larkin. The House Sergeant-at-Arms, Paul Irving. The Chairman of the Joint Congressional Committee on Inaugural Ceremonies, Roy Blunt. Rules Committee Ranking Member and Senate Democratic Leader, Charles E. Schumer. The Speaker of the House of Representatives, Paul D. Ryan. Senate Majority Leader, Mitch McConnell. House Majority Leader, Kevin McCarthy. And House Democratic Leader, Nancy Pelosi.
These are the most powerful people in the world, essentially, certainly at the head of the world's most powerful economy, all coming to the podium and the fanfare. You can hear it in the background as the inauguration process of Donald Trump is about to take place. Oh, I think somebody hit a false note. Oh, they look self-satisfied. Let's do Eyewitness News. Sarah Penny now with the very latest Eyewitness News at 6:30.
Thanks, Bruce. It is the big story this evening. While the Trump family take their seats in the gallery at Capitol Hill outside the inauguration venue, there have been scuffles with black-clad activists protesting against the historic swearing-in of Donald Trump as the 45th U.S. president. The activists have smashed shop and car windows, including that of a branch of the Bank of America, during a march against Trump's presidency. Police pepper-sprayed one of the protesters after a group attacked a McDonald's restaurant. Security in Washington is on high alert as Trump prepares to take his oath of office in about half an hour's time. Former President Bill Clinton and his wife Hillary can also be seen in Capitol Hill's gallery. During a concert in his name, Trump promised to unite the nation.
We're going to make America great for all of our people, everybody throughout our country. That includes the inner cities. That includes everybody. I promise you that I will work so hard, we're going to get it turned around.
Back home now, the death toll from this afternoon's fatal accident in Krugersdorp has now risen to 8. A taxi collided head-on with a truck on Leipart Street, injuring several others. ER24's Russell Mering.
Unfortunately, all 8 passengers had sustained multiple fatal injuries. Nothing could be done for them, and they were declared dead on the scene. At least 14 other patients were found on scene with injuries ranging from minor to severe. They were treated by paramedics on scene, and thereafter transported to various hospitals in the area for further assessment.
The SABC inquiry has heard the board's handling of the public protector's report was not simply a case of it failing to implement Thuli Madonsela's remedial action. EFF MP Fana Makwena says the board, under former chairperson Ellen Shabalala, went a step further by obtaining legal opinion that effectively countered what Madonsela had said and chose to act on that instead.
To say they failed to fully implement is an understatement, because they directly opposed the public protector's remedial action by implementing their own remedial action, which is to get that Nkunu advice and then act on it. It's much graver than just failing to implement.
The SABC board did not take Madonsela's report on review, and in spite of its damning findings against Claudia Motsoeneng, the board appointed him chief operating officer of the public broadcaster. And in the latest from the Gambia, the country's army chief says West African troops seeking to remove longtime leader Yahya Jammeh will be welcomed with flowers and a cup of tea. Chief Ousmane Badji says his soldiers recognize Adama Barrow as the rightful president, democratically elected president of the Gambia. There's still no clarity on whether Jammeh will step down peacefully after crisis talks with African leaders in the capital, Banjul. It's a partly cloudy Saturday in store for Gauteng. Overnight lows between 16 and 20 degrees, highs of 29 and 32. The developing story, while the Trump family take their seats in the gallery at Capitol Hill, outside the inauguration venue, there have been scuffles with black-clad activists protesting against Trump's presidency. When
you... The Money Show. Bruce is on Twitter at Bruce Business.
Incredibly nosy about the process in the United States. Can we dip into the United States? Let's see what they're talking about right now. I think their prayer's going right now. Let's have a little listen.
Where it gives light to everyone in the house. In the same way, let your good deeds shine out for all to see, that everyone will praise your Heavenly Father, respectfully, in Jesus' name.
We come to you, Heavenly Father, in the name of Jesus, with grateful hearts, thanking you for this great country that you have decreed to your people.
That there are a number of pastors who are praying, and everybody looks very solemn on a cloudy day in Washington, D.C. It's, 20 to 1 in the afternoon in Washington, D.C. Donald Trump looks suitably somber. Barack Obama looks more somber. In the next 20 minutes or so, there will be the official swearing in, and Donald Trump will speak tonight, and we'll take it live.
The Money Show on your number one news and talk station.
More Davos, more from your investments, more insight from Davos 2017, brought to you by Ashburton Investments. More on ewn.co.za. Friday's always a bit of a damp squib in Davos. Has it been damp, and has it been a squib this year, Stephen Curtis?
Yeah, I'll probably go with that, Bruce. Good afternoon. By the way, is the definition of somber scared and nervous, and more somber just scared, if you're talking about Trump and Obama? Yeah, I would say it's been quite somber, actually. I think a lot of people looking forward, in that they want to watch, but not necessarily with anticipation and excitement, to the speech by Donald Trump in a few moments. And in a way, he sort of, I've got to say, overshadowed the meeting of the World Economic Forum, you know, in quite a fundamental way. And I said earlier, I couldn't help but feel that this would have been almost a more productive meeting after the speech today than before it. All of that said, you know, China, the United States, it really is what everyone's been talking about. And of course, the G word, I don't mean, you know, a misspelling of the Chinese president. I mean globalization.
Globalization, yeah, we'll see whether or not Donald Trump does pull the rug out from underneath globalization. President Xi Jinping won't allow it from his perspective, and we could see the epicenter of global trade move away from the United States if this isn't played carefully. You've been rubbing shoulders with South African politicians all week. I spoke to the finance minister finally last night. You saw him, you saw Cyril Ramaphosa. Everyone, and my observation to Pravin Gordhan last night, was everyone on their best behavior, everyone pulling in the same direction, a much more optimistic showing this year at Davos?
So, Bruce, I mean, what I saw was real evidence of people who spent time in the same room together hammering things out. In the past, there's always been lots of platitudes. And I mean, I'm a cynic. I mean, I think you know that. I'm paid to be cynical. There's been lots of platitudes. This time, I'm sort of removing some of the cynicism and seeing maybe something's actually going on behind it. It's because everyone's sort of saying the same thing. I asked Maria Ramos yesterday. I mean, she's sort of uniquely placed, really, that business, that intersection between politics and business. If the optimism was well-founded, she thought that it was, and for quite important reasons. And we're talking about, you know, the agreement on the national minimum wage, other agreements that have been reached. So I think it is well-founded. At the same time, though, as Sipho Pojiana put it to me today, you know, there are very real headwinds in the global economy. We are, if I can use the phrase, sort of price takers in the global economy. We're quite small. One of my things that's distressed me greatly is how little talk there's been about Africa here, and how few people from Africa actually been here to take part in the conversation, even conversations about racism. I mean, how can you seriously have a conversation about racism at the World Economic Forum without a strong representation from Africa?
Exactly. But there is going to be the World Economic Forum Africa. It's being held in Durban this year, and KZN put up a show there this year. That happens in what, June, July?
Yes, it might be as early as May, but June, July would be about right. Sikle Zikalala, the KZN MEC for Tourism and Economic Development, but I think he's going to be more famous this year as the leader of the ANC in KwaZulu-Natal. I mean, I spoke to him this week as well. I mean, I was sort of struck how during the big presentations by Cyril Ramaphosa on the press conference we were allowed into, that, you know, Sikle Zikalala was a lot more preoccupied with. I don't know if he was reading what you were saying on Twitter or if he was reporting back to somebody about something.
You know, I mean, I think it's been a good show. I think the gathering in Davos seems to be very successful. Some of the world's great leaders have been there. Lots of meetings have been had. Whether or not it leads to any sort of equilibrium in the world, I was impressed with the fact that the IMF head, Christine Lagarde, at least started the conversation at Davos, the unprecedented conversation almost, about sharing the future, about redistribution, a conversation that probably hasn't been held much at Davos before.
Yeah, very much so. I mean, I made the joke earlier in the week that there's going to be an America somewhere. It says this is what happens when you appoint a French person to the head of the IMF. It's really important. You know, there was a time in South Africa we had a conversation about the basic income grant, which we haven't seen and hasn't happened. I think that is going to come center stage in conversations in the sort of global north and in North America and Europe. I think also, though, Bruce, it's a conversation whose time has come. I mean, I've seen academic research that is the best way out of a recession is to simply give people money, literally put it into their bank accounts. The Americans have actually done it from time to time through tax, and it's maybe something that I think people are going to start looking at very seriously. And what you really do see is an acknowledgement, I think, by everybody that the top sort of 1% have grown immensely richer over the last 30 years. And everyone else has sort of muddled along, really, and sort of wondered, how did that happen? And I think that is that issue about inequality is something we talk about all the time in South Africa. Inequality very much back on the center stage. The question, of course, is everyone's going to talk about it, but are they actually going to do anything? And I would suggest, he says, putting a cynic cap back on once again, that to make the world great again requires actually changing the structure that got the people who are in charge to being in charge in the first place. They're unlikely, if you are in charge, to change the structure that got you there because it suits you rather nicely.
No, I agree with you completely. I mean, you say you get paid to be a cynic. I think you'd be a cynic for nothing.
I think you would probably find I'm right.
I am right. I am right on this one. I'm not right on many things, but I'm right on this one. Steve McCurtis, have a safe trip back. Steve McCurtis on the line to us from Davos, where he's been all week at the World Economic Forum, keeping tabs on global leaders, keeping tabs on also South African leaders, their comings and goings, their toings and froings, and what they have been talking about.
The Money Show.
Pomp and ceremony. The event is underway in New York, in Washington, D.C., that will see Donald Trump sworn in as the 45th president of the United States. There's lots of protocols still to be observed and all of that sort of thing. The man who will swear in the new president of the United States is Chief Justice John Roberts. Now, Chief Justice John Roberts swore in Barack Obama in 2009, and he incorrectly recited part of the oath. And when he was administering the oath to Barack Obama, he incorrectly recited part of the oath, and Roberts prompted that, "I will execute the office of the president of the United States faithfully." And Obama stopped at the word execute, and he waited for Roberts to correct himself. So Barack Obama was well in touch with his obligations. I wonder if Mr. Roberts or Judge Chief Justice Roberts makes that same mistake today, whether Donald Trump will pick it up. I wonder, and whether or not it'll be valid then. But certainly Barack Obama wasn't taking any chances way back in 2009.
The Money Show.
The Biz Quiz.
Brutal Biz Quiz time this evening. Let's play the Biz Quiz this evening. I'll take your calls on 021-446-0567, 011-883-0702. Which organization was founded in Oxford in 1942? As the Oxford Committee for Famine Relief. The Oxford Committee for Famine Relief was in the news earlier this week when its head made allegations and made claims about the wealth divide, and there was lots of contentious discussion around it. What is the name, the shorter name, for the Oxford Committee for Famine Relief?
The Money Show.
The Biz Quiz.
Brutal Biz Quiz time on this Friday evening. Miriam, what is the Oxford Committee for Famine Relief?
Oxfam
is correct. I spoke to Ayabonga Tawe, the manager of Oxfam's Economic Justice Program in South Africa, about his views on inequality in this country on Monday, and he had some very, very strong views. You can catch the podcast if you missed it, and the podcast, of course, is freely available via our website, or you can simply go to your app store and download it, and you can have the podcast and listen to it as many times as you like. What is the theme of today's inauguration of Donald Trump as the 45th president of the United States? It has a particular theme. They say it's uniquely...
No, don't know.
No, that's not what they're calling it. They're not calling it uniquely, no, sorry, I don't know. But thank you for playing, Brian. Thank you for coming through. Justin, what is the theme of today's... Fine, don't play then, Justin. If you don't want to play, just say so. And the theme of today's inauguration of the 45th president of the United States, Donald Trump, is uniquely what, I wonder? Josie, don't be rude.
You want me to say make America great?
That has been his electioneering slogan, but today's inauguration has a different slogan, and it's uniquely something. What would today's slogan be uniquely about?
I think it's about anti-globalization.
Oh, no, I'm afraid not, Josie. Thank you very much for playing. Tandikile?
Uniquely American.
Uniquely American. I beg your pardon. Uniquely American. Absolutely right. The swearing in. Mike Pence, the vice president, is being sworn in as we speak. Which foundation was founded by Klaus Schwab? Tandile? Pardon? Oh. How terribly rude. 011-883-0702, 021-446-0567. If you want to play the Brutal Biz Quiz this evening, our lines are open if you want to play. There is a foundation. It was founded by Klaus Schwab. What is the foundation called? That is my question to you this evening. If you want to be the whiz of the Brutal Biz Quiz, hand me over to John, please, Cecile. Thank you. Hello, John.
How are you doing?
Very good. Quickly, John, the answer.
It's the World Economic Forum.
World Economic Forum, absolutely right. The forum meeting in Davos. What do you call the general increase in prices when your money loses value? There's one word. It's a dirty word. And the Reserve Bank wants to keep that thing between 3 and 6%. What is the word that talks about rising prices?
Inflation.
That is the word we're looking for. And what do the letters SUV stand for?
Sports utility vehicle.
You're the whiz of the Brutal Biz Quiz. Well done to you, John. I'm not sure if we've got a prize. Cecile, will you tell him if we've got a prize? I don't know. Have we got a prize? I don't think we've got a prize just yet. Yes, sports utility vehicle. Why are we talking about sports utility vehicles? Well, the National Consumer Commission this week took forward and said either you announce a recall of your vehicles and either you voluntarily repair the vehicles or we will make you. So, Cougar models, numerous Ford Cougars caught fire, up to 40 Ford Cougars caught fire. And that has been a big story this week. And we had Jeff Nemeth on the show on Monday. And, not a huge amount of mea culpa on that particular issue. So, we'll just do that. Now, let us dip in to the inauguration of the 45th President of the United States. The Chief Justice of the United States is about to get Donald John Trump to deliver the oath of office. Chief Justice John Roberts. But first, the Mormon Tabernacle Choir. Let's come back to that in a moment.